Hey, Deadly Teachers, and welcome to the Remote Teacher Podcast, where we talk all things remote outback teaching. This podcast and all our platforms come from a passion for helping remote outback teachers succeed, and in turn, positive outcomes for remote outback students. Visit www.theremoteteacher.com.au for links to the blog, the Facebook group of over 7,000 remote educators, and so much more. Never miss an episode when you follow and like the podcast on your podcast app and when you follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and sign up to our email list. The links are in the show notes. Best bit, the Remote Teacher Podcast episodes can be downloaded directly so you can listen to them when you're out of service on your long drives out to your community. Before I introduce our first guest for today, I'd like to remind listeners that our opinions expressed today by the guest or myself are ours alone, and we do not represent the Department of Education or other organisations unless expressly stated. It's also important to acknowledge that First Nations children, families, schools and communities are diverse and unique, including the strengths and challenges. So what we share in this podcast may or may not be applicable to you, your students, families, communities, class or school. It's important not to stereotype or assume, and to go into your context with a positive attitude, open mind, and willingness to learn. Take what you need, leave what you don't, sit back, and let's get started. Today we're talking to Nicole and Jack, who have been out in remote communities for a little while now. Before we begin to talk to them, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians on the lands of which Carl and I meet today, the Bunjalung people of Northern Rivers, New South Wales.
We'd like to acknowledge the Anangu, Pindara, Yunkundara people of the APY lands in South Australia.
Well, we pay respects to these groups and their elders past, present and emerging, and extend that respect to any First Nations people listening along with our podcast today. So thank you, Nicole and Jack, for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Now, did you two, this wasn't in our questions, but I'm just curious, did you two meet out in the lands or had you known each other before and then went on this adventure?
No, so I'd been teaching in Yalata for 2 years and I came home for school holidays, which home was Adelaide for me. That's where my mum and my sister and my nan are based, and met Jack there. And yeah.
And dragged and then, him out with you.
Yeah, about 9 months later, I had an ankle operation. I had a reconstruction and I said to him, I can't drive. And he said, okay, I'll come out for a term and see how I go.
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah.
What an interesting way to meet and get to know each other really well. After 9 months, you're coming into the middle of nowhere with me.
Jack, I'd just like to get your version of that story, man. Did that happen?
No, I think that's pretty good. I don't know. We sort of just come up. I had nothing else really going on at the time. I just graduated uni and was just doing like a part-time job and just sort of looking for the next step. And then Nicole obviously needed me to come out there, and then I got a job cleaning the school.
Yeah. No, they're important people at the schools, man.
Exactly right. Those toilets were never cleaner. And then I eventually got a job at the youth shed. And then they had an SANFL guy who come up and ran footy during the term, and I sort of just got talking to him, and he told me about a job that was available on APY lands. So that's when I spoke to Nicole, and we sort of decided that that's something we'd like to do. She was keen to go up, and so just started that job last year, about this time last year. I got the job this time last year and then started at the end of the next term two.
Yeah. Sounds great.
Which again highlights something not on our question list, but it's those opportunities for partners who come with us that there are these stepping stones and these ways to find your way in and make yourself fit in. So that's an exciting transition to football in the remote communities.
Yeah. Well, I think it's pretty unique as well that on the land you have two people that can do jobs that they've studied for and go down the career paths they want to, whereas most people, one person comes up as a teacher and then the other person's got to just find something, I guess. Yeah, exactly.
Well, both Jack's degrees are in sport. So
yeah.
So tell us about you, Nicole. You've been there for a while, but what was your teaching journey like, and how did you end up remote for the first time?
Yeah, so I graduated from UniSA in 2018, but while at uni in 2017, I went on a field trip that was offered by UniSA in Flinders. So Ross Coleman, Chris Tapscott, Dennis Harris, some fellows that have had quite a bit of experience working across the APY quite a long time ago, they run a field trip for uni students to come out to the lands and have 2 weeks experience. And I applied and got a position, and I came out to a Dolkina and I was like, oh my God, I think this is for me. And so I finished uni the following year, did a term of TRT in Adelaide and just started applying for beginning of 2019 school positions, and ended up getting offered a few positions around the lands. And I didn't really know much about Yalata, and I was like, oh, it's so far away from the rest of the lands. Like, is it really remote? And then I just took a chance into a junior primary job. Never regretted it. It was fantastic.
Which raises much, doesn't it? Because it is something that is this huge adventure, but also this huge learning curve and these huge opportunities. So you spoke about the multi-campus, choosing the right one and making it work, because you've moved between a few and you've taken up so many opportunities. So would you like to talk a bit about this idea of how the multi-campuses work and then the opportunities it provides?
Yeah, so in South Australia, the APY partnership has 10 schools within it, Yalata being the most southern, so that's down on the Eyre Highway off the Great Australian Bight. And then if you go about 4 hours north, you get to Oak Valley, and then you've got the northern hub right at the top of South Australia, which has 8 schools. So when Jack got offered the SANFL role, that was the northern hub of the APY. It doesn't cover Yalata, Oak Valley. So we had to move up. I won a job at Freegun. I was a curriculum coordinator there last year, and I also ended up teaching the seniors based on the needs of the site at the time. And then this job came up at Ernabella, and I'd heard some amazing things about our principal, Peter Kenny, and just his vision for the school. He's worked in some international baccalaureate schools, and he was overseas in Singapore and a lot of places for a long time. He just wanted to come and really improve the APY schools, and he had this huge vision, and it just sounded really exciting. So I applied and won a personalized learning coordinator position here. So
So did you find it easy moving between the APY schools because they do collaborate and work together, or how was that moving around for you?
Yeah, so there's a conference every second year that collaborates all of the APY schools together. So you get to meet and network with people in similar contexts. It's always something I considered coming up north, but I really did love Yalata and I didn't want to leave. Mm. But it was sort of a had to do sort of thing. And it was definitely nerve wracking. Yeah, but we ended up making a lot of friends in Freegun that still just, they drive over to Ernabella just to visit us. So
totally.
And Jack got to know a lot of the fellas in community through footy. So we ended up making friends quite easily. And I play softball. I've played softball since I was a little kid. So I was actually able to join the softball team. And it was easy for us.
Jack, I'm here listening, mate. You're sitting down quiet. And can I hear a bit about what you do, mate, as the partner of a teacher, you know? And, you know, what do you do on your side of things with the footy, mate, if you don't mind? I'm a footy mad person, mate.
So I'm the APY coordinator for SANFL. That's the title. My main role is to run the men's league. So during the winter, we have a men's footy league, which runs like any other footy league. We've got 10 teams across all the communities. Saturday and Sunday, we'll go to a different oval and I bring all the equipment out and then keep track of, you know, what players are registered to which teams, and then do the scores and ladders and all that. And then outside of that season, it's just footy carnivals. We did a trip to Adelaide with an under-18s team, worked with Jindu. They had a carnival. So Jindu is like an Indigenous footy group company that just do a lot of work in the Indigenous footy space. Yeah. So they had a carnival for under-18s. So we took a whole group of kids from across the whole lands to compete at that.
How did they go, mate?
They struggled a bit because...
It's more than the footy, it's the experience and the things that come with it.
I've gone on a couple of like school trips and stuff, and it was by far the best that I've ever been on, just because it was just a good group of kids that we didn't have any trouble, and they all
Nicole
just
Nicole go with you. Was she keeping everyone in check? No.
This was all me, but pretty much.
Yeah,
we had
the kids pretty much by himself. There
it
was no
pretty
speeches.
Much me and two other guys from Yalda, actually, and then 22 other 16, 17-year-old fellas. But that's what made it a really good trip. You know, the on the way there, there wasn't like because a lot of the kids are from like Yalda don't really know the APY kids as much, so they didn't really speak to each other much. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the weekend, we couldn't separate them.
No, great
that
outcomes
really
on cool. those things. Great outcomes.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my role. And then I'm also employed at the school. So I've just started this term at Annabella. I'm the PE XSO, so just helping out.
What a great connection between community and school as well, that you can move between the two. You know the adults, you know the parents, the uncles, and then you're at the school with Nicole.
Yeah. I think that's what we sort of found, especially moving to Annabella, is that I already know a lot of the people here already, or at least the families of the kids. So
you've got your networks and all of that already. And
I guess that's what's different about a teacher to my job as well, is that I'm across the whole lands, whereas like a teacher's focused on one community.
He's laughing at me because I'm the nerdy English teacher in the classroom, and Carl was always like the cool footy guy outside. I could get a bit of street cred from him. Nicole's pointing and agreeing for the audience who can't see.
it goes a long way for, you know, your partners. And even if your teachers, you get out into the community, you know, get into sports or whatever it might be, down at the barbies, whatever, you get out and get seen, you get street cred.
Yeah. Well, I think you can definitely tell the teachers that play softball and footy and do that extra stuff, you can just tell that they know the kids, I guess, on a different level.
Yeah.
Or know the families. You know more about the families outside of, like, past the kids as well.
Which raises the idea that you were going to talk about as well, Nicole, of the importance of relationships and perhaps how you, you know, work together with Jack, but also your passion for the sport you play. Did you say softball ball before? Yeah. So how do you go about building those relationships?
Well, I think it's just doing stuff outside of school is the key to everything, because if you wake up, you go to school and you go home, I think life in a remote community can get become very much of a grind, and you feel like all you're doing is getting up, going to school, going home, getting up, going to school, going home. Whereas if you're actually actively making that effort to do things outside of school, like, we are so busy all the time that we're never bored. Like, I don't have time to worry about what hobbies I should start taking up, because there's just so much to do. It's just crazy. And having our friends come around and invite us out to cultural ceremonies or cultural things and doing all of those things because we play sport with them is just that next level. Like, we probably wouldn't have gotten invited to that if we didn't have that prior connection. So,
because obviously, you know, I'm an Indigenous person from Halls Creek, the Kimberleys, and that. And, you know, once the community take you in, you know, they take you in as family, pretty much, you know, treat you like family, take you out here, there, come around for barbies or drop off bush tucker to you, or, hey, I'm going on this fishing trip, whatever it might be. But, you know, once you get out and about and build them relationships, you get a pretty tight network of the whole community, is pretty a tight network group working as one.
Yeah. Well, like, it was quite funny because one of the new staff members at the school the other day got a bit confused because our friend came over and he was all painted up for business. And and all the new staff were told, don't look at the men. Like, don't look at them. And and it was quite funny because he just walked on into our house and, like, not a care in the world. And she was just kind of watching, like, what is going on? but it's just like when you've got that relationship, it's just that respect of not staring. And I think people take that as, oh my God, don't look, don't do anything, stay in your house. I think people get a bit confused between.
Yeah. And you learn all the cultural protocols and all of that. And, you know, they let you know straight away, you know, what to do, where you can't go, you know, sacred site, what around the communities. Once you just got to, like it sounds like you're doing, out and about in the community and building them relationships, gain so much from it.
Which ties in really nicely. I wonder, can you tell us about some of this exploration you've done or some of these special experiences that you've had?
That's such a hard question because there's so many things. I'm trying to think. In Yalata, there's wombats out there, which is something really different to APY. So that's a bush food for Yalata mob. And we went out with like our really close friends and Mima, one of them, the elders of the community, she's quite close. They're quite close with her. She was getting Jack to do the digging for the holes and what happened.
Yeah. We just had a big crowbar just trying to, because all the wombat holes are just massive holes in the ground and they're all like connecting thing under the ground. Yeah. So you just get the crowbar and you're trying to dig the holes out and then you can sort of try and like find where they might be.
Because she'd like tap and see where it was hollow. And yeah. She'd be like, wait and listen.
And she could hear like, I could tap and tell it was hollow and she was just pointing where I should like hit the crowbar. And then I was just hitting it, and then I just went boom straight in, and then the whole fork came out from underneath me, and I fell straight into the hole. And she's just sitting there cracking up laughing.
Do you reckon she set you up for a laugh, or it was an accident?
Yeah. And then every time I see her, oh, she's like, always remembers that. Oh, I remember just fell in the hole.
Did you end up catching a wombat or not?
No, we didn't. It was sad, but that's all right. and then, like, I mean, we went out for a whole day a couple of weeks ago just to get bush tobacco, Minkalpa. Some of the women wanted to collect some. We went for this drive, and it turned into, like, a 10-hour drive. We just went and saw all these amazing places. Mm-hmm. And then some of the kids came out in a different car that went back. Mm-hmm. And so there was, like, some of us tucked up in the back of the car, like, with a blanket trying to cover the dust coming all over our faces so that we could get back to community. And like just
and I had no idea how we were getting back because we've just gone through like proper out bush, no track. And then I had just a bunch of older ladies in the car. One of the ones was just like pointing out where I've got to go down the track because I couldn't see the wheel marks and she couldn't. She's like, nah, go down. And then I'm stop, that we went the wrong way. Turn around.
It's actually really funny. I called Jackie Boy like as a nickname. And on the APY, I'm not sure if it's the same as in other Aboriginal communities, got told off because he should be Jackie Man, not boy, because he's not a boy. And it's funny because when they first heard it, like some of our friends were like, that's weird. Why do you call him Jackie Boy? And now even the old ladies call him Jackie Boy. So it's
caught on. So good. And those places that you would have seen, literally no track. So the chances of any other people from a different culture having seen what you saw,
it's just beautiful. The country up here is just next level. Like people go to places like Yalara and they think they've seen the most incredible thing they've ever seen. But like there's so much more country just like that no one sees. And it's just...
You're making me a bit homesick here at the moment listening to these stories. No, don't be sorry. It's great. I'm like just thinking about home while you're talking and that.
Although there's no wombats up in Halls Creek, that would be a new thing for you too.
Yeah, I'd probably do what Jack did. Someone had set me up.
Just a short break to share books and resources by Jaru Gijaman, Carl Merrison, and me, English teacher Hakeya Hustler. Each book and resource was created with Outback students in mind and with the aim to increase student engagement while reducing teacher workload. Black Cockatoo was the 2019 CBCA Honour Book, and it's a short novella that's accessible for low literacy students but has many themes and issues to deep dive for your older students or students who need extending. It's been studied in years 3 all the way up to 7 and 8 all around Australia, depending on the unique needs of each student and the approach by the teacher. This book comes with comprehensive, differentiated free teacher resources on our author website, www.carlandhakia.com.au. My Deadly Boots is a picture book set in the outback that follows a character as they show off their new footy boots they saved up to buy. It covers themes of identity, confidence, connection to country, but also has some challenging themes to explore for older readers. Again, Deadly Teacher Resources over on our website. Tracks of the Missing is a YA suspense thriller that follows Declan Archer as he hunts for a missing busload of students. This text covers challenging themes, including ones of suicide and drug overdose, stolen generation, and more. So make sure you talk with your First Nations colleagues and your local staff to make sure this book is suitable for your context. For the classrooms that it is suitable for, it comes with a great teaching pack to do all the hard work for you. Over in our TPT store, we also have getting to know you activities, brain breaks, NAIDOC activities, and other resources designed to make teacher planning easier. All the links are in our show notes, so make sure to like our Instagram page, Facebook page, and sign up for our author mail list so you don't miss out on new books and resources. We have two new books out every year for the next few years, published at the moment with Hatchet Books and Magabella Books, with illustrations by Samantha Campbell and Dub Leffler. So you're guaranteed to have more books perfect for your outback classrooms and mainstream classrooms. Your students will see themselves represented on the pages, their faces, their stories, their experiences. Now let's get back to this deadly interview.
So you've been there, Nicole, for 5 years and Jack a little less as he joined you after, but being there for a long time allows you to make those deep relationships and makes a huge difference. Would you like to talk about that value and that connection that you get when you make the time and energy to stay out remote for a longer time?
A lot of people come remote and they'll try it for a term and they'll be like, not for me, go back. Even in my first term in Yalta, there was days where I cried because I missed home or I was not used to not going out with my friends. And I reflect, and 5 years down the track, I have about three of the same friends that I had when I started. But you make new friends, but it's not until you push through, like you've got to push through that hard bit at the start where you're feeling homesick and everything is new. And it's a bit of culture shock for me because I'm not used to this lifestyle. Same way when you take the kids to Adelaide, it's culture shock for them because they're not used to that lifestyle. And so like, it's kind of good because it puts yourself in their shoes when you expect them to go to Adelaide. People say, why don't the kids go to school in Adelaide? And it's like, well, why don't all the teachers come out and teach here? You know, like it's the same thing. But I think life being out here, I can't imagine leaving. Like I feel so safe here and I always just wait to come back home. This is home now. Adelaide's not as much home. I don't know. I don't even know how to answer that because it's just, yeah.
Well, that just shows how engaged and passionate and how much you love it being
remote. And the value of the relationships that you have formed, that you can feel work through those with your new connection.
Yeah, with kids, with the community, you know, with Jackie Boy there.
Uh-oh, it's caught on. It becomes home. That's really powerful for listeners to hear once you push through the tough stuff and finding those connections and networks formed in fire, those people who understand what you're going through and make those connections with you.
Yeah, definitely. It was highlighted like last season when I was playing softball, I'd often get asked to umpire by other teams. One of the teams got a bit grumpy with me because they thought I was cheating just because I play for Fregon. I wouldn't be umpiring if I was cheating. And then I was able to go, hey, you know, your family with everyone that I'm family with in Yalata, so why would I be trying to make you lose? And like just being able to say things like that to people like and meet them on a level that brings a connection because I didn't know them that well, but I knew their family really well. So, like, it was just able to, like, mediate situations and stuff like that. And people just like, oh, yeah, Nicole's fine. That's all right. So
it also highlights the value of relationships when you spend that time there and invest in them. Because when you're in the classroom and you're managing behaviour, you can also call on those same connections to help you draw it in again.
Yeah.
I think even before we come up to the APY as well, people sort of knew mainly you. I knew that we were coming because he had such good connections in Yalta, and then
they
had families up on the APY. So, you know, Jack and Nicole are coming up, like, you got to look after them. And then we come up and they're like, oh, you're Jack and Nicole, like such and such told me about you. And so, yeah, having those connections, those good connections in Yalta.
Totally. Name preceded you. Yes. So you both had these opportunities to develop, finally got into the area that you specialize in, Jack. And Nicole, you got to have some leadership opportunities as well. Would you guys like to talk about, you know, the PD, professional development, the chances to step up into different roles, perhaps both in the sports kind of direction and in the education direction, how it's kind of helped you grow as people and as professionals?
Yeah, well, I think from the education perspective,
when I was classroom teacher in Yalata, I applied for a coordinator position when I moved up here. I would have been quite happy to go back into a teacher position, but I was like, you know what, I feel like I'm ready to sort of take another step. There's still a 0.5 teaching load in the coordinator positions up here, so I was able to do a bit of both. Just sort of put my application in and hope for the best, and then won that position. And yeah, it taught me a lot about managing two roles at once and those sort of things. And the PD opportunities that you get on the lands are just amazing, because often if a school wants to do PD, they'll offer it to every school on the land so everyone can go to that school and do the PD together, because no one's, I mean, from Indulkina to Pip, it's 8 hours maybe. So that's from one end of the lands to the other. So if you put it in Otabella, it's 4 hours each way for both schools. Yes. So it's like, kind of meet in the middle sort of thing. And
that's really unique, because lots of schools kind of operate on their own by themselves in the outback, so that's very special that you've got the AP1s. And your principal, you said, was IB trained, so you had this extra layer of support and professional development.
Oh, and Peter is just, I've got a personal commitment in Melbourne in a couple of weeks and I don't often take leave. And I went in there really nervous because I hate taking time away from sport. I was like, I'm really sorry, but I've just got this thing I really need to go to. And he was just like, well, you've got some spare time while you're there. And he's like, I'll set you up to go view a school while you're there. And just makes everything a learning opportunity, which is great. Mm-hmm. And like, it's only just building my professional capacity. I've never been more supported than I have been by Peter. So it's just been amazing.
And they kind of bounce together, don't they? Because you're working PESO support. So you would have the best of both worlds, I suppose, because you'd have your SANFL training and support and team. And now you've also got your school team with Nicole and the principal. Yeah. That sounds amazing. So you've got the best of both worlds to develop.
Having all those relationships with everyone helps both sides as well.
Yes.
You know, you get to know everyone's whole family because you've got the older kids, brothers playing in our league, and then you've got the younger girls and boys coming through. It's so hard to have a job or find a job in footy. There's only like a handful of jobs.
Carl agrees. Yeah. He's laughing because he agrees.
Yeah.
So to come out here, obviously just to have a job in footy is good. To pretty much run a whole league, do everything that involves in running a whole league, from like the media stuff to like posting on Facebook to then the being there on game day, and then doing, I don't know, coaching stuff even with younger teams. And that's mainly what it's given me the opportunity to do a bunch of different things that if I stayed in the city, I probably could do one of those things and follow down that path, which is probably the same with most jobs. When people come up here, it's probably even for teaching as well.
Yeah, I think you sometimes, like, everyone's like, wow, you got into leadership so quickly. And I think that's one thing about being remote, is that you have the capacity to spend a lot more time focusing on work. I choose to go to school a lot of weekends because I want to improve as much as I can. And I don't know, it's just, I think these kids get a lot of testing ground. Like, teachers come out here and as graduates, they test their abilities on the kids. And yes, I think that's a huge contributor to why a lot of these kids are so far behind, is because they're always getting new teachers that are just coming out, and it's just test after test after test about teaching and learning. It's about, oh, this is a new teacher and they need to learn. It's not about the kids.
Yeah. They are passionate, but the reality is you're early, new, you are just refining your skills. So the power that you bring for having been there for 5 years, and the passion that you bring to like make it work. Continue. I hear you.
No. You said it perfectly.
I'm just looking at Carl in case he wanted to pipe in with more football stuff, because I was sure he was
going to. We'll chat and stop recording.
But I so hear you about that opportunity for leadership. And it's not just that, number one, there are younger staff. So there are, you know, you might have been someone that's been there a little bit longer and have the opportunity to step in. But in your circumstance, there's also the PD, the training, and the support from your leadership to train you up into that role. So it sounds like you're not just being like plonked into it or anything like that. They're actually valuing and supporting you to be the best you can be.
Yeah, there's 5 people in our leadership team and everyone else is experienced except for me. Yeah. So I'm actually able to learn from people who have been, like Trish, who's working in our bilingual education role. She's supporting unemployed educators to get our Pitjantjatjara program up and running so that they're getting an hour of Pitjantjatjara twice a week. Half an hour of Pitjantjatjara four times a week to try and get that repetition and have that bilingual education, because we know that kids can't be excellent speakers of English until they're excellent speakers of their own language. And if they can read and write in Pitjantjatjara, then that's going to make it easier for them to read and write in English. And that whole idea. And we've got these amazing trained animal educators in this community who went to uni and are trained teachers. And we need to tap into that more. We've got all these experts right around us.
So you highlight that it doesn't always happen though, and you're highlighting the power of the people who are there and who will stay a lot longer than many of us will. So valuing, supporting, upskilled training and utilising First Nations colleagues in those roles is a very important point you made.
Yeah, definitely. I just thought, can I quickly talk a little bit about 2-way science? Is that okay?
No, please do.
Two-way science was introduced to me in my first year of teaching by Chris Deslandes, who's one of the authors. So he lives in South Australia. He's a local to Port Lincoln sort of way, but he was a principal on the lands circa the 70s, I think. He's been part of the APY for a while and amazing with language and has so many beautiful connections with people. He teamed up with WA department and they did 2-way science as a collaborative. So 2-way science is essentially a pedagogy to value animal educators as the first teachers, value their input of what they think the kids should be learning at school. And then it's my job essentially to relate that to the Australian curriculum and extend their learning. So like, for example, in Yalata, we did a unit on puna, which is like the trees and the wood and the artifacts that they make out of the trees. Rita, one of the elders in community, she took us out and she was making these little wooden wombats. They're about the size of two tennis balls and she was sanding them. And I was just thinking to myself, I was like, and she said, like, this is what she wants to teach them about, how you sand it, what tools you use and all of that kind of thing. And then I thought, oh, maybe we could talk about friction, because the heat when you sand something, and then went into teaching about friction and that maybe curriculum science side of things, but showing the kids that like their culture and their science and things that they do every day is science nonetheless. It's science. And I think Chris Deslandes and Matt Mercer, who was the deputy at Yalata and also worked at Oak Valley for a long time and now works for 2-way science, are just instrumental in helping new teachers really listen to animal educators and make sure that they're just as much in the teaching team. Like, you're working with someone that, I hear the language a lot, oh, my AE, that my person that I work with. And we're really trying to change the language to the person in my teaching team, the other teacher that I work with, the animal educator that I work with. And that language is so powerful, and not saying my, because you don't own that person. They're just as valued and important to the team as you are, and teaching the kids. And I think 2-way science is just the most incredible thing for that. And you can, there's 2-way science, the number 2 wayscience.com.au, 2-way science SA maybe website. Go on there and find all the resources, and if you're interested, to have a bit of a look.
That's a great tip, because there's also a 2-way science Facebook group as well for people to jump on and learn. And that importance, it is in science, but also 2-way across our curriculum.
Mm-hmm. 2-way science is the integrated, so it's essentially our third subject area. So like, we're mandated to teach the kids, I guess fourth subject area in a way, because we're mandated to teach English and maths, and then they do Pitjantjatjara language lessons, so that's their third. Those are the three main subjects that they do every day of the week. And then 2-way science is the integrated unit that encompasses all the other areas of the curriculum through the animal lens. So it's like, it's their choice and it's their voice of what they want their kids to learn, essentially.
And hands-on and on-country learning as well.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're picking out the content that's related, so it's coming from your grassroots, and then you're making it link to Australian curriculum.
Yeah, and I think it's super powerful for their futures as well, hey, because the kids are really confident with a lot of the things we do for 2-way science, and it's something they feel proud doing, and it's probably a career path they would choose to go down if they get that extra exposure to maybe the Western way of doing things that links to that being a ranger. The kids would know so many things already about being what you need to do to be a ranger. But then, like, there's those little things that
Yeah, like, that'd be so overqualified to be out in the bush and do this and, you know, this track, yeah. Find this plant, you know, oh, we need to find this animal or this area, whatever it might be, but they need the, what is it?
Like
the
logging ticket,
the qualifications.
Yeah, and being able to record, like, what they've seen and all of those kind of things, because the way the world is, they love everything being written down and documented and recorded and stuff. And I think if we can give them the skills to do that with the knowledge and the amazing skills that they already have, then we're just giving them pathways to do so many more things with their futures that I think people don't necessarily consider possible.
Totally, yes.
Obviously, you both follow AFL, Nicole?
Yes, yes.
What team? This is very important.
Port.
Sticking in the Adelaide area, yep.
Yeah, no, I've got my nephew at Adelaide, Shane McAdam. And one of my other great nephews just moved to Port. Bumunje Rioli.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. No, he spends a lot of his...
We're really excited to watch the first round.
Yeah, yeah. The second question, Jack. Round 5 of the AFL season, true or false, is every game going to be at Adelaide, mate? You should know this.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Yeah. There'll be...
You're going to be there, mate?
I'm hoping to, yeah.
It's in school holidays.
Yeah.
So we should be there.
I'm actually just talking with the AFL now. We're going to be there.
I love footy just as much as he does.
We're hoping to bring some kids down as well. So
Jack and Nicole, are there any APY land superstars that Carl's name dropped all the Kimberley superstars? Are there any APY land ones that are up and comings? Who are we watching out for?
Well, I think that's like something that we really like you're building at the moment is that interest to really go to the city and play. And because like there's so many good players here, like so much raw talent.
Yeah. But
that leaving home is the difficult next step because of COVID. COVID has ruined a lot of things because people haven't left home.
Yeah. There's two factors that sort of like hold back the kids from here. Is the first is like the grassroots footy, I guess, like because in Adelaide, you know, you've got Oz Kick on at every local oval, and I don't know, I guess whatever.
Just go straight into men's footy, or you better kick around.
Yeah, that's right.
No Colts, no under 10s.
Last year we had our first year of doing like a schools junior footy comp.
Yeah.
Which was good because the kids actually had a chance to play some structured footy, you know, before they were turned 16 or 17. So I think that's one of the main things that we can focus on is the grassroots, just teaching like the basic skills. And then, the second barrier is obviously just moving so far away from home, which is just, for anyone really, like if you asked a kid in Adelaide to move to the APY lands to play AFL, like they'd have the same sort of issues.
Or your new partner of 9 months and you're telling them,
Thanks, very special people. But I think because of COVID, it's sort of put a halt on all of the programs because I know both Port and Crows had some pretty strong programs that had come through regularly every year and it was like a fixture on the calendar. But since COVID, it's all sort of stopped. And now we're, trying to work back and bring back those opportunities and stuff for the kids. So,
No, I totally feel you. Because when I was running the Kimberley Spirit, which was tied in with Claremont, West Coast and Fremantle, and, COVID came, I was over here still running things, but nothing was happening because... communities are closed,
So for people listening who are footy fanatics, there is lots of opportunities to be involved in football, but also the challenges of bringing things back and finding your feet again after COVID times, because it is a challenge still, I'm hearing.
Yeah. I think that's sort of one of the things that's been fun about my job, though, is because it's almost like starting from a blank canvas because of COVID and everything sort of stopped. Sort of now we get to go and like what's going to be a good idea to grow the league and stuff. So, like, in a couple of weeks, we're starting our first women's footy league, which will be good as well, just because...
Is Nicole going to play? Has she been drafted to the first play?
I've got no idea. I don't think I could kick a goal, so maybe I'll just go on the back lines just to, yeah.
Running straight lines, break the packs.
Yeah, I'm pretty tall. I'm 5'10", so I'll just run down.
There's one thing you could tell a new teacher rocking up, what would it be?
I think this is the hardest thing the thing I found the hardest was to actually stop talking myself and just listen, because I am such a talker. My last name is Chataway. I talk all the time. It takes a lot to shut me up. But, it took me a year to really listen.
Important to put time in to getting to know the community and just getting involved in the community.
But to not see it as you're going out to make friends in community. You're not going out to make friends with community. You're going out to make friends. Yeah. You know, like, these are just my friends. Like, these aren't people that live in the community that I live, that I work in. Like, these are my friends. These are the people I socialize with.
You'll always be spoken about once you've spent a while in community. And sounds like yous are doing a great job, you know, Jack, Nicole, getting out in the communities and getting involved and, you know, telling your side of the story that how much you're loving it and, you know, learning and growing in your roles and all of that.
And that deep listening that you speak about, because it is so easy for us from different cultures. Even Carl tells me off all the time because I'm someone who talks. He says, yeah, but you're talking and maybe you're listening, but you're not really hearing me. And that's what you make space for, like you were saying, Nicole, when you listen.
Yeah.
So good to chat with you guys. Thank you so much for joining us and talking footy and talking teaching and roles of partners. It's an important role you both play for each other. So
hopefully catch up with you in person round 5.
Keen to continue the conversation? We'd love to chat with you. Join us over on the Facebook group Teachers in Remote Communities, Past, Present or Future, or see us on our socials. What were your key takeaways from this episode? Share them with us. Loved this podcast? Make sure you like or follow it and share it with a colleague or friend. Who knows who has had a secret dream of working remote or which experienced teacher needed to hear just this. Help move this podcast up the charts and reach more remote, curious and current remote teachers. Leave us a 5-star review. We'd love to know how this helped you. Are you a First Nations educator for a remote outback community? A teacher? Principal, service provider? We'd love to chat with you for a future podcast, so please reach out. Now, don't forget you can find a whole lot more remote teaching content over on our blog, www.theremoteteacher.com.au, and on our socials. We can't wait to welcome you to a future episode, so stay tuned for more. We have some amazing guests lined up. Thanks for listening.